This is a HeadGum Original.
You know, I was thinking about your show, and you get to ask people about low points, mistakes, grieving. But whoever gets to do that for you?
My therapist. She gets to hear a lot.
Let me ask you this. I know you do a lot of touring, a lot of club comedy. What's a low point from your time on the road? Like the heckle that got through and really got to you, or the mugging in the back alley?
I was at a Helium comedy club in St. Louis, and it's very hard to eat healthy on the road, so I had ordered a salad, and I had them take the portobello from the portobello burgers to put it onto the salad.
Smart.
I was supposed to have two shows that night, and about 1 minute before I went up for my first show, the waiter came over and said, we're all out of portobello. And then the manager came over and said, hey, we only sold three tickets for the second show, so we're just going to cancel it. And then the host said, please welcome to the stage, Gianmarco Cerezi. Something about that. It was so many things all at once.
But they didn't cancel it. Wait, that was the first show?
That was the first show. So they canceled the second one. But they let me know.
Before you did the first one.
Right before. Immediately before I went on stage.
They demoralized you and then sent you out.
Yeah.
And you knew you weren't going to be eating healthy.
It's the food in some of these places. There are some places you cannot eat healthy for the life of you.
No. There is no way. There's no lever you could pull. There's nothing you could do. You're going to eat the chicken fingers.
Mm-hmm. That's the healthiest thing on the menu.
Yeah. If you want to go healthier than that, it's gin and tonic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess where I'm getting to with this is, well, first of all, to hear your delightful anecdote. But also, I want to ask you, Gianmarco, are you okay?
Let's punch it.
Should I not talk over this?
No, you can talk away. Now that's faded out, I'm going to ask you again sincerely.
It was a little sarcastic the first time.
Well, I'm sure you understood that I was going for extremely strong move of pun on the song title that we're about to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you're picking up on it. It was a subtle joke. It was subtle. The song's called I'm Not Okay. And I'm curious about your level of okayness.
I'm okay at this moment. My girlfriend was mad at me about 30 minutes before this.
Okay.
So I'm still okay. I have to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's a normal level of trial and tribulation.
Sure.
Girlfriend being mad.
Sure.
I'll say that I'm probably my most, this is post-COVID me, I'm my most therapized I've ever been in my life, which is to say spent decades at zero. And and now very in touch with my therapy self, having been through pandemic, which begat all sorts of revelations about how I was conducting myself poorly in relationships and what I didn't even know myself. And now, I'm getting to know myself. It's a beginning of a relationship.
So you're new to therapy?
Yeah. So let's say maybe 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been with my therapist probably 6 years. It feels more like maintenance at this point. There's not as many like big breakthroughs.
Yeah.
We haven't seen each other. She'll see people in person now.
But you haven't gone back.
I have not gone back, and I think it's not... I don't think it's as good. I don't think Zoom therapy is as good. I feel myself being loose. I feel myself checking my phone subtly next to the laptop. I used to have a rule where I was like, the phone goes away, and now I'm like, let me just peek.
Yeah, everybody knows that would be a good rule, and yet when you're in that Zoom room...
Mm-hmm.
You want to bend the rule.
I just think I do. I think it's weird to it's my laptop. I use my laptop for pornography.
Sure.
And I just don't think I should be working out my mommy issues on the same device that I work out my mommy issues. So I do want to. I would like to see her again. Like we have a. There's something different. You know, there's things about being with a person. There's smells.
Yeah.
There's just being in the room.
Yeah, there's a vibe and, a fragrance, you know. I don't know if she smells bad or good, realize.
She smells good, thankfully. That would be very challenging.
Yeah, I guess that's probably master's degree in counseling, second year.
hopefully
there's a course on that.
We hugged once, I think. Once I asked for a hug.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I was going into my first surgery the next day, and I was very scared. I got a hernia from CrossFit. And so, yeah, laugh it up. It's very scary. And
any said, hernia is scary.
Yeah. And it was my first surgery, and it was a horror show. It was the worst. The next surgery is going to be far scarier because I know what it entails.
You mean this surgery went so bad that you're more scared of the next surgery?
No, the surgery was fine itself, but like just the you say goodbye to your loved ones, and then you have to leave them. I think in my mind it's like I say like goodbye, and then I pass out, and then like they start giving me the drugs mm-hmm. as I'm holding the hand of an old college friend who yeah. we've fallen out of touch, but he gave me this one moment. But no, they then roll you like a horror movie into a room, and there's a light flashing on top of you, and there's like mechanics, like the bed's moving, something's holding you, and I started sobbing, and there was a nurse who, thankfully, I don't know what her job was, but she basically was rubbing my chest and going like, it's okay. And then I passed out. But so, I want to be drugged up.
Yeah, that's your last memory, is the terror and the crying and the chest rubbing.
I would like it to be the night before I'm planning to have surgery. What I'd like is for the doctors to break in mm-hmm. to my place, and while I'm asleep, just do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Like when you are going to, you know, rip the Band-Aid off of a little kid's knee or something. You say, I'm going to do it on three. One, two, and you rip
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes.
The Band-Aid rip trick. But you have to sign up for that. The same way that you're signing up for it in Eternal Sunshine or The Spotless Mind or something. Mm. You've signed on the paper that you're okay to have your memory erased. And you don't know when they're going to do it, because otherwise it'd be cheating. So the night before, they sneak in.
I like that.
As you can guess by this conversation, you're listening to Punch Up the Jam, the podcast in which we take the greatest hits of all time and we make them even greater. It's quite simple, really. And this week, as I, one of your hosts, Evan Gregory, out here in the wild, wild west with my co-host and brother Andrew on paternity leave, as I'm losing my mind and absolutely 100% not okay, descending into madness, I'm very blessed to have this timely topic and an astute and sensitive guest in the person of
Welcome.
John Marco Cerezi, stand-up comedian extraordinaire. You've seen him on Comedy Central. You've heard him on The Moth. And he has an absolutely awesome podcast that I'm imploring you to check out called The Downside, in which we explore the low points of people's careers. And, you know, it's like the most self-destructive thing to have a fellow podcaster on your show and then tell people to spend their listening hours with that other person instead of you.
We didn't say instead. I mean, as a podcast boy, the more the better. And the ones that I like, sometimes when I catch myself re-listening,
mm-hmm.
to like a podcast, like I'm a big fan of Anthony Jeselnik,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just like addicted to his podcast. It's just like something about it is comforting. It's reached that second level of my brain where I listen to it to fall asleep. Like I just know it.
Yeah, he's gone beyond being your parasocial friend to being your dad.
Yeah, yeah. And when I'm re-listening, I'm like, what am I doing?
I've heard all of these jokes before. I've heard all the stories.
And I'm always like, I don't know, podcasts, like sometimes I have the illusion like, oh, I'm educating myself. Okay, I don't read books, but I listen to NPR.
Sure.
And if you ask me what I just heard, no idea.
No, you don't know what it is. And podcasts, you could pretend it's education because it's people talking very close on a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
But were they imparting information that you needed? Or were they just talking about their day as a prelude to an ad about Peloton?
Sure.
But it feels really relevant.
It does.
It feels really relevant. And so I'm going to use that as a segue into talking about our topic of choice, which is the song I'm Not Okay, parentheses, I promise, by My Chemical Romance. Now, this is a song that has been brought to us, gentle listeners of Punch of the Jam, by our esteemed guest this week. And I'm just fascinated to hear, and to you I put the question, why? Why this song?
So I was an angsty, existentially angsty high school boy. I went through a brief goth phase.
Okay.
It was the summer after eighth grade. I was at a summer camp.
Prime goth times.
Mm-hmm.
Eighth grade.
First I was in a skater boy phase, which was funny because I could not skate. I own two skateboards. And when I mean I don't have balance, I can't even ride a bike now.
But you tried. You own some skateboards.
Yeah, but like I would stand on it in the grass. I wasn't like really going for it. I was very injury adverse,
yeah.
But I wore independent and I played Tony Hawk.
Yeah. So it's the skater boy aesthetic. You know, you can never
Absolutely.
Really ascend to the top of the crowd, but you can be in the crowd if you just have the style.
Yeah. And it was Avril Lavigne. Uh-huh. This was like prime Avril Lavigne. So wearing ties.
Yeah.
On
she's
t-shirts.
Only ahead of My Chemical Romance by a couple years.
Yeah. And then I went to the summer camp. I had a crush on some girl and she went with like a goth like guy, green hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's one of those things. Looking back, like in my mind, like he was like this older guy, and he's like, oh, he was probably 16.
Yeah.
And I was like this old man.
Yes. Oh, this giant in the industry. Yeah.
And I was like, there was some camp event, and there was a goth girl named Mallory, and someone was like, this is Mallory. They're like the goth group. I somehow was talking to them.
Okay.
And they're like, this is Mallory. You two should make out. And she was like, okay. And I was like, I'm goth now and forever. This, yeah. It blew my mind.
She kissed me with her goth mouth and I caught it.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And they were like, they were real, I mean, real goth. Like they were doing a Salt and Ice. Do you know that?
No.
Where if you put, I believe, I didn't do it myself because I'm not into this self-mutilation, but it's like you put salt and then you put ice and then you put salt and you put ice. There's some chemical thing where
on
you create
your skin?
On your skin, you create a burn or some kind of like, I don't know if it's a scar that's permanent or just lasts a while, but you essentially are tattooing yourself. I think it's tough to like make a design.
You're branding yourself.
Yeah, it's
is
like,
it like they put rock salt on the roads because the ice has a lower melting point or one of those things? Like, why? What is the point of the salt?
It's something about the constantly doing the salt and then the ice and then the salt and then the ice burns your skin.
Okay,
and it's like a beginner's cutting yourself, I think.
Yeah, it's a gateway for sure.
It's a gateway for sure. And I like wasn't f- I wasn't that into I wasn't that sad. But I ended up like, I left this summer camp. It was very unfortunate because I went to a new high school and you have that chance to like reinvent yourself.
Totally.
And I had just made out with this girl a couple times and now I was goth. I went by G. This was Hot Topic days.
Yes.
So
sure.
I wore big
jeans
with paint stains and they had chains attached to the back.
The giant chains. Did you use it to hold your wallet and all that?
I had a chain wallet as well. So three chains hanging off me now.
Wow.
And then Winnie the Pooh shirt, jellies, those jellies that like, I think it was like if someone breaks it, you have to have sex with them. I don't know if that was the rule that never seemed to happen though.
Yeah.
I'm like holding out like, someone break them, please.
Yeah.
And
why isn't this happening for me?
And so I just like, I loved, I just remember hearing My Chemical Romance at that like prime time of like raging hormones. And it, one of these songs, I'm Not Okay, especially that like encapsulated just like being mad about, you know, if I had some crush on a girl or someone broke up with me, I had intense visualizations of me singing it. To like, mm-hmm. for some reason, the whole high school was there, and like she was there in the front row, and I was like making eye contact, like I'm not like it was
yes.
How I would express myself, and she would see it and want me back, I guess.
Oh,
now that I've humiliated her in front of the whole school, she was like, "Oh, he's really a great guy."
Well, it makes a lot of sense because in every romantic comedy, the things that the protagonists are doing are really humiliating, but we're meant to understand them often as endearing.
Mm-hmm.
So I 100% believe that this is a daydream you're entering into, in which you as he are winning the girl back. But it may not matter whether or not she gets back with you at the end of that story. You would regardless be a hero to the whole school.
Yeah.
For having sung that song.
And I just, when I was younger, I just had a lot of musical fantasies of revenge on ex-girlfriends that I would sing, and they would have to bear witness to my pain publicly. And like, that's, for whatever reason, that's like how I process those emotions. And it's such a weird, I don't know how other people listen to music, but I have a lot of imagination. My imagination with music is like I am watching myself perform it in the third person. So I'm watching me. I'm not. And sometimes in my head, I'm like, well, be first person, be on the stage singing it. But I think what gives me that thrill is something like I am doing it and I'm watching it. And it's some kind of like godlike thing that a human being cannot do in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
The closest I got was like Zoom comedy shows where I could do comedy and watch myself doing the comedy as I was doing it.
Yeah, and then hear the audio echo back through the Zoom. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, you're a fan of music. You want to see this song performed, but also you have a complex where it must be you doing the performing.
Yeah.
I mean, I have the same thing. Who doesn't have a musical bone or musical aspiration and just imagine themselves on stage any show they go to or yeah. whatever, you know? Even there's a version of it where you're like, man, I could do what this guy is doing.
Sure.
I should be up there. But there's another version where even, you know, the most talented singer, band or whatever, you know, you're not going to touch what they are bringing to the table, but you want to be on that stage.
I think like, I am an envious person. I feel envy, deep envy. And I think there's something about being able to witness it and it's me doing it takes away the envy aspect. Like, I think like sometimes I'll see things. It's tough for me to watch stand-up comedy because I think there's a feeling of like, oh, I want to enjoy this, but I'm feeling like, fuck, I'm not that good, or totally. I'm not making them laugh.
Or at least you're not there yet. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And so like in this imagination where I get to watch it, I get to bear witness and enjoy it, but I don't feel any envy because what do you know? That's me up there doing it.
Good for him.
And I think the reason I picked the song was because whenever I had these fantasies or whenever I was listening to it, and I still listen to it, still on my workout playlist, is that I am okay, and I was okay, and
even
in terms of
even
like
at the time,
the grand scheme of the world, and financially, health wise, everything compared to the average human being on this earth, I really was okay, and I think the guy in My Chemical Romance was probably okay too. Even the lyrics, he seems okay. He's probably in high school. There's a lot of like, I remember listening to, is it Olivia, what's her name, Rodrigo, is that her name?
Yes.
She's a famous singer?
I said yes, not knowing what the end of the sentence was.
Yes.
But yes, the famous singer is Olivia Rodrigo.
And she's like 19, right, or something?
Yep.
And she'll have these songs like, you know, Driver's License, or just like these intense breakup songs. And they're very moving and emotional, but there's part of you like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. That's your high school boyfriend.
Yes, yeah. In fact, we went into this in depth a couple months ago. We punched up the song Deja Vu by Olivia Rodrigo, which is exactly that. This is a high school experience of what a relationship is. Like going to get ice cream is what's described as their date, you know. And yet the emotion of it is sort of feels like you're performing the loss of your lifelong partner, you know, the drama of it. But that's okay, because that's pop music is just like teenagers being in their feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and that's certainly what's going on in this song. Just, you need to give the teens an excuse to scream and just let it out.
For sure. I remember when my little sister, she was going to college, and her high school boyfriend broke up with her because he was a year ahead and was going to college, and she was so emotional.
Oh, it's a classic conundrum.
And
the one goes to college a year first.
Oh my God!
Yikes!
Well, also it's like it's done. Sure. You want to hang on till Thanksgiving break and have the breakup then? Sure, go for it. But I remember, and I was sweet to my little sister. I try to be the emotionally supportive one in the family. Mm-hmm. But there is a part of me like, you're going to get over this super hard. You're never going to think about this guy again in a couple months. You can't tell that to anyone.
You can't tell them before the fact, like, I know this guy is not happening for you.
Yeah.
You have to wait for the breakup, then support them through it. Then maybe, like you said, 2 months later, she's already moved on and she's fine. Then maybe you have a laugh about it.
I remember when I was in college, there were some people in my grade, in my little musical theater conservatory, where there's one girl, she had a boyfriend at a different college. And, you know, you just see the pattern. You see it over and over again. She had to leave parties early because we have to do our Skype. This was in Skype days.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, we're fighting a little. And then Thanksgiving. And then she comes back and she's like, I'm fucking everybody. I'm fucking everybody. And it's like, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. You gave
Enjoy your college.
You gave it a try. It's sort of like something you had to do for your past self.
Yeah.
You know, I promised my past self that I would give this a try for like a couple months. And now we're past the expiration date. I can finally let go of the high school relationship, and we moved into the promiscuity phase.
And I had summer camps. I had one relation, my first high school girlfriend. Like, we went to summer camp, and it was immediately over. First, she went to camp and like started getting distant, and I was home, and I was heartbroken. And then I went to musical theater camp, and I mean, within 3 hours, I was like in a dorm room, just like talking to a girl, and I thought like, I need to break up with my girlfriend now, just in case anything might happen. I mean, it was immediate.
Yeah, you didn't know that anything else was out there.
Yeah.
You didn't know. I want to listen to a couple clips of this.
Please.
Of this song, but maybe before I hit play on second one, I'm just going to set the baseline for maybe some of our listeners that are coming up to speed on what the heck we're talking about. So this is a small selection of song facts.
Song facts.
We're talking about the song I'm Not Okay by My Chemical Romance, which we might refer to as MCR.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. That's an acronym. One time I met an accountant that worked for this band at a bar in Manhattan, and he referred to them affectionately as My Chem.
My Chem.
Yeah. You know, whenever we're doing the books for My Chem, you know, just drop some nuggets that way. So maybe we call him My Chem.
I like that.
One interesting thing that I came across that the fans might know is that this band was founded by Gerard Way, the singer, after September 11th.
Oh, my God.
As an emotional response to, he took it so hard, he wanted to do some good in the world. So he started this band to help people and get his feelings out there. And there's something... It's just so endearing. You don't want to laugh at it, but as I dug a little bit deeper, this guy is from New Jersey and was really into art and comic books, and already had gone to the School of Visual Arts in New York and had a job at Cartoon Network, I think, doing, well, he's probably an intern, but was getting into animation and comic book stuff. And there's something so amazing to me that he already had a job in the art world or in the entertainment world. Like, it's already sort of like on the road to achieving his dreams. You know, if you're a kid thinking, I love drawing, I love comic books, the first step on your dream career is surely interning at Cartoon Network. And then 9/11 happened, and he's like, I have to cancel this dream and start a band. That's the only way to channel what I'm feeling about this horrible tragedy.
I've heard stories, people, you know, after 9/11, they're like, I'm joining the army.
Yeah.
And I think more people need to have this response. I'm starting a band.
Yeah. Instead of, I'm signing up to shoot people. What if you just put your feelings into the band? Even at the time, I think they were already talking about how Gerard Way, the singer, he's a pretty young guy. At the time that this came out, he's in his mid-20s. He had already experienced a lot of issues with addiction, alcohol, prescription drugs, cocaine. And when I think about that background, plus his story of, I was really sad about 9/11, so I wanted to start a band. That to me sets this song up as the most anthem. This song is the thesis of the band. Like, here's a guy in recovery, in sobriety from addiction. He's literally started the band as a way to vent about his feelings and help other people deal with emotional stuff. And he finally wrote a song just called I'm Not Okay. This is like the peak, the apotheosis of the
For a
the
second,
band.
I thought you were going to say it was the thesis of 9/11. And I just like, wouldn't it be great if instead of like some horrible patriotic song that every American sings, that if like Americans start playing I'm Not Okay, like before football games, like this was the patriotic song. Americans being like, I'm not okay.
Yes!
And just people just screaming. I'd like that. Instead of like some weird, like, I don't even know what genre of music some of these patriotic songs are.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Imagine if it wasn't, I'm proud to be an American, which is...
I
don't hate it. It's bland. That's what we're really feeling. Let's just all scream together. Maybe we could get it out. You know, on the flip side, now I'm just going dark, but on the flip side, what if, you know, in August 2001, the hijackers had just had like a good screamo session and just got it all out, you know? Instead of going
you
through with the plan.
You think that's the solution to terrorism? Is My Chemical Romance.
I don't think it's the solution, but it's something to think about. It might be one thing in the recipe, you know?
Sure.
They're not allowed to listen to metal. They're not allowed to listen to punk. What if they were? What if they were? Maybe. Could we prevent some things? Please don't cancel me. I don't know, man. It's just so good.
It's right in there, man.
Oh, man.
It's right in there.
It's right in somewhere. It's a perfect intro. It's just so simple.
Yeah.
It's just so simple. Chugga, 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 chugga. Just the rhythm guitar playing one thing and then lead guitar. Pure energy. You know, you dropped a little nugget a few minutes ago, which is that you went to musical theater school.
Yeah.
And you thought maybe I wasn't going to pick up that thread and ask you more about that. But now I know that, unlike maybe some of our other guests, you might want to hold forth on, you say, your opinion of a melody or a chord change or the effectiveness thereof. And I'm not going to prevent you from doing so.
I think that's my shortcoming, is it's hard for me to articulate. Lyrics I can talk about, mm-hmm. but music I'm pretty foolish. I did the ear training classes. Mm-hmm. I took the piano classes. I couldn't tell you a lick of it.
You know, it's half music, it's half lyrics. If you get one half right, that's a D plus. You know, you start there. You go up from there. We haven't had a single lyric yet, and yet you're already amped. I love this opening. It's just guitars going chugga chugga. There are 1 million bands that have done this and even sound similar, you know, from the 70s up through, I don't know, that opening makes me think of Weezer a lot. Just mm-hmm. like the power chords going hard at this tempo while the lead guitar plays like one very simple line. But there's a million bands that have done it, and yet like this energy is really working for me. I don't hate it. Now here we get our first lyric. Okay, before we get to the chord, let's just recap a couple of lyrics here. I really want to get your sort of teenage take on this.
Yeah.
I'm a couple years older than you. I'm hearing My Chem, you know, in the real world when it came out. I'm already like just out of college. So I've already had my teenage experience of like, what are the bands that mean the most to me? So I want to hear your teenage take on this. If you wanted honesty, that's all you had to say. I love that opening line.
Yeah. It's... I think like all the, like looking at the lyrics in total, as with many songs, sometimes I'm like, these aren't great. But each line, like I could hang an emotion onto that line. So there's a degree of like, yeah, you want honesty? That's all you have to say. Yeah, and that's that's an emotion in and of itself. Like, okay, you want me to be real? Here, I'm going to fuck it. I'm going to yell.
Yeah, I agree strongly. I mean, you know, there's going to be a million people that like My Chemical Romance is not for them because it's just so of a genre.
Yeah.
And if you're not looking at it from the right angle, it's just pure cheese. It's just cringy cheese to see these kids performing the screams and all that stuff. You know, fine. But if you're in the mood for it, like this is a pure way to get your angst out. And just like you said, there's good and bad versions of doing this. And you look at these lyrics like, this is good, man. We do a lot of songs on this show where it's like, this is a massive hit. And they are phoning the shit out of this. The rhymes are bad. The grammar is all backwards just because they're trying to get in a hacky rhyme. This doesn't read that way to me. Just like you said, each little couplet, each little pair of lines is its own thing. So far this is working for me. For all the dirty looks, the photographs your boyfriend took. Remember when you broke your foot from jumping out the second floor?
So first of all, I as like a angsty kid, wasn't great with women. The idea of like your boyfriend. Like it's just like you have a boyfriend and it's not me. It's just like yes. Yeah. I relate to that. And then jumping out the second floor, the idea of jumping out the second floor, it's such a like you weren't really trying to kill yourself, but you're trying to let people know that you want them to think that you're trying to kill yourself. You're jumping out fourth or fifth if you're really going for it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of just like, yeah, I want to kill myself.
Yeah.
But not really. But like that, it's just that feeling of like, I want people to know. I mean, the part of the song is just like, it's not real like I'm suicidal. It's just like I want people to know I'm in pain.
Yeah.
I think you're right. You don't get it.
You know what I was picturing? Just seeing that, like what I pictured was like Almost Famous or something like that, where you're having a really rocking party and you're sort of performing fun. Like, we're going to jump from the roof into the pool.
Yeah.
That's what I was picturing is, oh, you're jumping out the second story window to impress a girl or to show that you're the coolest rocker at the party and there's all these other teenagers around. That's my experience of like going to teenage parties where Trevor is showing all the different ways he can break a beer bottle with his head type of thing.
I see.
But I think your insight may be closer to the truth, which is a half-assed, you're acting out for a cry for help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, something about this song is just like, it's like trying to connect by being like, you know you're sad like me. You're with like, in my mind, whoever this woman is that he's talking to, she's with like a regular guy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I know you're not happy. I know you're not happy. And don't you want to be with a miserable prick like me because I understand you?
Because I understand being
miserable.
And
that's what I was leaning on in terms of like, so it just like immediately it captures like, you want honesty, you have a boyfriend, and you're sad. And it's just, it connects, it resonates.
You know, there's a whole subgenre of, well, all music, but certainly rock songs that are just about like, you are a girl with boyfriend. Consider me instead.
Yeah.
The boyfriend is a character in the song. You know, for me, this is a good version of that because we're not dwelling on the boyfriend and how much he sucks.
Yeah.
You know, you're just talking about your own life or whatever. So I'm kind of okay with this version, but I do want to locate it in that subgenre of a Get With Me song.
And the photographs your boyfriend took, again, these are all kind of cryptic. It doesn't fully explain it. But I guess it makes it seem like her boyfriend, like, shared nudes with his friends, maybe. It seems like, so the dirty looks, the photographs he took. So it's just like, you know, your boyfriend's a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, we don't know that for sure, but that's a good inference.
I just feel like this was around the time when like pictures were new and like people were like doing all sorts of, it was pre-Snapchat.
Yeah.
But like people were taking pictures of things and parents didn't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah, this song came out in 2004. So do we even have MySpace at that point?
I believe so.
Maybe
I believe
barely.
So. 2004.
Just thinking about what is the dissemination of pictures happening, you know, but it could be just pictures on film. And then, you know, if we play out this scenario, they become locker room fodder. Just real piece of shit boyfriend stuff. You know?
Sure.
The major achievement of My Chemical Romance is the level of screaming.
He's acting his face off.
He's on another level with the ability to scream in a single song. It's incredible.
Well, and listen, I haven't watched a lot of live My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
But I think one reason I've never jumped to see them live is because every live recording, I remember trying to sing along. This is, again, musical person.
Sure.
And it's all very high. I mean, he's screaming. Yeah. Ultimately, I think there's...
And imagine if you're using your musical theater voice to sing along.
I've ruined many of songs with my musical theater voice.
It don't work.
But I'm pretty sure the high note that comes later is a high C, or it's very high.
Yeah.
And when you watch it live, every high note, he turns it out to the audience as if like, now you guys sing. And I'm like, oh, you're just giving them the high notes. That's what we're here for. And it's like, yeah, of course he can't sing like this live. He's screaming. His voice can't sustain this.
Yes.
And it just felt like every song of My Chemical Romance that I would love, it'd be like, I'm not, oh, and he turned out to the audience the whole time.
Yeah. Help me with this one, guys. I know you love it. Yeah.
I can imagine Pavarotti as he gets to the high note. He's like, you guys.
Yeah. Ridi Pagliacci. Let me hear it, fam.
Yeah.
This is not a visual medium, but every time Gianmarco is doing this very funny bit, he's gesturing with a mic to the audience. That's what we're doing here. And I think it's an incisive accusation.
I'd love to do it with punchlines for stand-up comedy when I can't figure out the perfect punchline.
Yeah, you and know then you I have was a great like setup. So we have a big problem here in the sense that what I'm trying to do here is identify potential ways to punch up and improve a song that I've already said is pretty good.
Mm.
So every time I say something is good, I'm really putting myself in a hole.
But here, I think it's like, again, I think like, I don't know, my thought is it's like this guy is okay. He's probably at a private school. She's fine. She still kind of likes him. I just imagine this guy is got rich parents,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they're divorced.
Yeah.
Maybe they're about to get divorced, and maybe sometimes he hears his mom and dad yell downstairs.
Yeah, and that can hurt.
That can hurt, but he's sleeping in a bed that the maid made earlier that day, and it's very comfortable, and the AC is on point.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to go to an Ivy League, and everything's kind of fine, and he's going to move on from this girl, and so he is okay.
Yeah, the amount that he is not okay is very relative.
He feels a little bit sad.
He got miffed at something. You know, every human's life is as difficult just as they know, as whatever their circumstances are currently. You know, you can have the best life in the world. You're still not happy because you're only thinking about what happened that day. And are you keeping up with Richard Branson next door, whose super yacht is bigger than yours?
Yeah.
You know, that hurts on that particular day.
He didn't get to go to prom with the person he wanted to go to prom with. And now he's going to pretend he didn't want to go to prom in the first place.
Yeah. Is it too much of a stretch to say that this is a first world problems song?
I think it's definitely a first world problems song. I wish, you know, you could give this guy a hug, be like, you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You just got the lead in the musical. Again, I'm thinking of myself in this case, but there's just a degree of like, you know.
Yeah.
You're doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's always somebody got it worse than you. I'm nervous about making it political, and then I'm going to punch up this song by saying, hello, I am an impoverished child from a third world country. I'm not okay. I'm the one who's really not okay. Right? You know, this is now a song about the world. Climate change is going to ruin all of us. We're not okay. gents, and we can, ladies and gents, we can agree on that, right? So you and I have to think about who's the right level of not okay. Like, maybe this guy's being a little performative about whether or not he's okay or not.
I mean, maybe he's not aware, as he's describing his circumstances, just how good he has it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a teenager. Everything's about you. You're inherently like one of the most selfish beings on the planet.
Yeah.
You don't know whether somebody next to you is not okay or not. You haven't even thought about them. You're just worried about Diane and the fact that she's still dating Derek. As a singer, do you have opinions about just the first three syllables of this chorus? You know he knows how to sing it right, because the second and third times, it's not okay. But the first time he sings it, it comes out like, I'm not okay. And there's something...
No, that sounded exactly like it does in the song.
Oh, I'm not okay.
You know what? You were not exaggerating it. I thought you were like exaggerating it, and now that you've isolated it, wow.
It doesn't make for a good podcast to play the same clip over and over, you know, but it's just tickling me so much.
In floor, I'm not okay.
I mean, oh man, I feel like this is going to ruin the song for me. That is insane.
You can't unhear it, really. But there's a genre thing where you have to pronounce things different.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, this is a simple song in terms of that. This song is about a clear emotion, and it's like, I'm sad, or I'm not okay. And so
we're used to pretending we're okay, right?
Yeah. And so you have to differentiate somehow. And so, like, in a way, he's created new lyrics, even though it's the same lyrics. So then he goes, I'm not woke-ay. Woke-ay. And yeah. I just feel like this is, I'm a musical theater boy. I like a little bit of story. Mm. And I feel like this guy's given me his story. He's like, in a way, he's crying with it. This is his version of crying. Like, I'm not okay.
Oh, I see. I think the shaping of the syllables, mm-hmm. the shaping of the diphthongs is his way of crying.
Yeah.
His performance of crying. Okay, I love this theory of this linguistics theory. Let's get to some more verbiage here in the second verse.
You wear me out. What will it take to show you that it's not the life it seems? I've told you time and time again, you sing the words, but I don't know what it means to be a joke. And look, another line without a hook. I held you close as we both shook for the last time. Take a good heart.
Okay, the thing that I grabbed onto is the first line of that second verse. What will it take to show you that it's not the life it seems? What is it? I'll tell you what I'm guessing, that it's not the life it seems. I think he's just talking about, look at the normies. Look at all these preps that go straight from high school, they get a degree, and then they get a job at the firm. They're doing normal stuff. They're trying to make you think that that's the way it has to be in it, and I'm telling you it's not the life it seems.
Yeah, I do feel like that's it. That's what he's saying. But I also feel like it connects to this. And this is like a toxic emotion that I am guilty of, where I believe there's like a feeling of, if you knew how sad I was, you'd give me more love because I'm in such pain. So like he is saying that, like, this is not, they're all full of shit. They're all miserable. Mm-hmm. All their parents don't love each other. The dad's cheating. He has a secret family in Florida. Mm-hmm. But it's also him saying, like, what will take you to see that, like, I'm in so much pain and you should love. There's some feeling. I just know what it is so deeply to be like, if you knew how sad I was, you would be running to my to make me feel loved. And I know that poisonous thought.
Yeah, what is that? That's like a human instinct, because there is some truth to like a pity version of love. Like, that does exist.
Yeah.
That's not the good kind of love.
No.
You don't want that one. You want the one that's about mutual respect and attraction.
Yeah.
You don't want the pity one, but if it would get her to take a second look at me, now I'm playing that card.
Yeah.
Now I'm playing the pity card.
And that's the thing you want to tell this troubled version. You're like, yeah, they're not okay, but they're trying to make it work. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get through the day. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, this is a version. There's adults like this still, who are just like, they're so so depressed. And they're like, don't you get it? It's all fucking bullshit. And you're like, yeah, I know. And I'm just trying to make the best of it.
Yeah, and I already figured that out. Yeah. that's the whole story. That is the point.
Yeah.
Is understanding that. And you just don't want that to be your whole personality. Like, I'm the one that gets it. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be part one. And there has to be a part two, which is, and then I chose to become a lawyer. I don't know.
Yeah.
And in spite of it all, I'm still a dad. Okay, what's left in this song? We're going to get back to a chorus, the peak of the whole thing. We have yet to get to the quiet part. Let me play through some of this stuff.
The best.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, we're back to the second chorus here. Same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a repeat?
Pretty much.
Yeah, you wear me out. You wear me out with your indecision, right? About not getting with me.
Oh, there's one thing I forgot to say. Oh, God, what a good solo.
Yeah, pause. Oh, you don't want to miss the solo.
Yeah, but I held you close as we both shook. Mm-hmm. For the last time, take a good hard look. It, to me, it's very much like this is the, back in the day, we'd say friend zone. This is the guy
mm-hmm.
where she came and said, like, you know, he either shared these pictures of us or he cheated.
Yeah.
And like there's that feeling of, hey, you opened up emotionally to me.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you want to give me a hand job? and that's the, I don't know, that I guess that's the lesson you learn as you, like, you learn about all this stuff. You're like, well, some people are attracted to you and some people are not. And like, it just, to me, this feels like there's a lot of possible, yeah, she likes you. Yeah. She's your friend and she's your confidant. She's not into you that way.
As we used to say in middle school, she doesn't like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
This 100% is friend zone. I'm glad you said that, because this is actually clearing things up for me. I was maybe struggling a little bit with what is the punch up angle here as I think about this song primarily as a positive force for telling people to go to therapy and talk about how you're all not okay. But you're giving me some insights about how there may be an element of toxicity here, which is playing the pity card, saying I'm not okay as a tool to get her to look at me and get out of the friend zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lyrics as you're reading them do point to a friend zone dynamic.
And yeah, it's just the logic. It's such fun just to be like, I really like this guy. Oh, he's so sad. Oh, so sad. Let me spend the night with this sad.
I do need to pet this sad, wet puppy.
And there's some attraction. Like, I know there are a lot of women, like Game of Thrones, they're attracted to Jon Snow because, like, oh, he's miserable.
Oh, he's so
sad.
Mopey. So
but
mopey.
He's also hot as fuck.
He's
and
a dreamboat.
That's the part.
It's another ingredient to that,
that
recipe for
me
sure.
Me and my goth, the big pants with paint on it, didn't understand.
Too much room in the pants. And truthfully, there is something to, if you scream, you're not okay. And if you create an emotional moment, like that feeling of crisis, you know, a bonding can happen.
Yeah.
There. That's what you're hoping for by playing the pity card, is like by creating this, climactic moment where they learn something about you. Okay, we come out of the second chorus and we get to this.
Love it.
This taste, yes. Oh! Woo! Now,
so
that's just pure goodness.
And in my fantasy, the way it always works, I'm always singing until the guitar solo, and then someone throws me a guitar from off stage, and people are shocked. They go, oh, fuck, he can play guitar too? And I just like, and it, I catch it right before the first chord.
Hell yeah.
I catch it, put on the pedal, wow, wow. Oh,
yes.
Amazing.
Oh, 1,000%. In fantasy, obviously you're not doing that. No, I've seen a video of one of my guilty pleasures is Huey Lewis, and I've seen a video of him doing exactly that, singing whatever, some huge hit, I Want a New Drug or something, and on the beat, obviously they rehearsed this 1,000 times and probably did it on tour 1,000 times, on the beat right before the phrase starts, somebody tosses him 30 feet away an alto sax.
Woo!
And he just starts playing a raging sax solo on the mic, like exactly on beat. It's exactly what you're talking about.
It's funny. I have so many fantasies. It's just a musical instrument being thrown and caught. Two things I can't do.
This is just
play an instrument and catch anything.
You went to musical theater school. You're not a baseball player. All of your fantasies involve performing on stage in just tiny, tiny tweaks. Are you singing or playing a guitar solo? But this guitar solo is so good, man. It's really short. This is like a major label track made for radio. Guitar solos are on their way out. They want to sneak one in. You got about 8 bars of deliciousness here, but you know, if you're listening, it's the two guitars, right? They're in a duet where they're kind of playing in thirds. Well, you know what the guitar solo really reminded me of? Sorry, I'm kind of jumping around, but there's a riff right at the end where it goes really fast. It sounds just like Bohemian Rhapsody guitar solo to me. That little bit.
Yeah.
And I know that this band is channeling Queen amongst other glam rock bands. I don't know. They cited their influences as, you know, Bowie, Queen, Iggy Pop, and the guitar player said that his idols are the Brian May, the lead guitarist from Queen, and the guy from, what's his name, Rhodes from Ozzy Osbourne. So you know they're directly channeling that. But not all those bands do this guitar duet thing that is really, really tasty, where you're playing the same melody but in harmony with two guitars. It's really effective. Let's proceed. Gosh, such delicious screaming. But it sounded like they were doing a repeat there, the dirty looks and the photographs your boyfriend took. But they snuck in one new detail on, you said you read me like a book, the pages are all torn and frayed. That, to me, is really supporting your theory.
That's what, right? I'm saying.
Right?
Where it's like, it sounds like they got into like a fight, and she was like, I read you like a book.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but I'm a fucked up book.
Ooh.
I'm in pain.
Oh, Gerard, I know what you're going to think. We've always been best friends. I read you like a book.
Okay. I'm going along with your analogy. I am a book. But try this. Oh, I'm a bad book.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a bad, bad book, baby. You don't want to turn these pages.
I think that was something about the goth, at least in terms of like the mating call of the goth man, is like I am, my pain comes from the fact that I'm so deeply intelligent and aware and interesting that, like,
sure,
I get it in a way that your dumb boyfriend could never understand. That's why I'm so sad.
Yeah, and your dumb social studies teacher.
Yeah,
and your mom and dad, they don't get it. I get getting.
And so, like, that's what the, like, I guess it's what the brag is, or like what you're supposed to be attracted to, is that, like, I'm so fucked up because I'm so wise and so, like, cool and unique.
Yes, I'm scarred and worth pitying. But can we start a podcast called The Mating Call of the Goth Guy?
The Mating Call of the Goth.
You know, you're scratching the surface here in a meaningful way, but there are depths to be mined.
Yeah.
In such an anthropological venture. Let's think about it. We've come to the absolute apex of this song. This is the climax. I love a quiet climax. We've just been screaming the whole time, so how could you possibly get the audience's attention? You gotta go quiet.
Amazing.
It's just amazing. And in case you're still on the fence about whether or not he was okay by the end of the song, he said fuck.
I mean, you get this beautiful reversal. I'm okay, but he's clearly not.
Yeah.
And then immediately, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Just just...
I love that. It's like the message is clear. They're like, this is how I perform life. You know, you go around saying, I'm okay.
Yeah. I just imagine it, and it's like she still cares for him, and they're fighting. She's like, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Trust me. I'm not okay.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm not a fucking okay.
Yeah.
There's you just to preserve that fuck, to save it for the end.
Yeah.
I'm a big cursor, and then sometimes you're like, yeah, if you save it, though, if you save it right for the end, you give it one fuck.
Yeah, if you go early and you spend it, you know, it's just worth less. But there is a radio edit, of course, in which that line is, I'm really not okay.
Really?
Yeah. You know.
Brutal.
It's not horrible, but...
Hate it.
Once you hear it the original way, it sounds so watery and tepid. Yeah. I'm really not okay. I guess I got a couple follow-up questions just about the musical style, which is... this song is of an age. All songs can only come out when they come out, and they are a response to the other genres and songs of the world. Does this song still work? Does this song work even better now, or is it worse?
I think this song connects so deeply to a pure emotion that it will always work. That something about this song just connects to the feeling of I am hurt, and the pain is so intense that you should want to love me for my pain. And that's just something that will never go away.
That's eternal, for sure.
Yeah.
That's eternal. Both just for humans needing to say that you're not okay. We're all trying to perform okay all the time.
Yeah.
And just admitting that you're not okay. That's huge. If we were all doing that, how much better would the world be? But you know what else is eternal? Is teens using any excuse they will get to get their crush to go into their pants.
Sure.
That's eternal as hell.
This would just never work. It would just never work. I guess there's a way where you're not winning her back, but you're just like, you're getting the feeling out. You just got a feeling, and you just got to yell, I'm not okay. And like in my fantasies that I had about this song, I don't think it ever was like, and after she saw me perform, she was like, let's get back together. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I'm feeling it, and I just have to let it out. And you have to look at what you did. There's a little bit of like, look at what you did. I'm not going to necessarily, we're going to get back together, but like, yeah, look at the pain you caused.
Don't you feel bad about yourself?
Don't you feel bad?
You made me scream so loud.
And then get soft, but then scream again.
Yeah. Oh, man, a lot going on here. Any other crumbs that need to be dropped? Anything that we've missed that might be an input into this punch-up process?
I just, like, wonder, like, what... This is someone who has not been to therapy. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, this is, like, someone... I'm curious...
Like, this is their only release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's basically having the... I like the I'm okay, I'm not okay. It very much is, like... He's forcing his own breakthrough moment in a way. Like, I feel like a way, like, in the beginning of the song, he's kind of manipulating or being like, look, you know, you're full of shit. You know, you don't like your boyfriend. Everyone's full of shit. And then by the end, I feel like his own emotions have overtaken him. Like, the soft I'm okay feels to me like him, like, he starts to cry. And he goes, no, I'm okay. And then he, like, it becomes about... By the end, he's no longer trying to get her to do something. He's just like, I'm in pain. And he's overtaken by his own feelings. And that solo, that guitar solo, to me, that's the emotion like breaking through.
Mm.
Just like...
That's part of the arc for you. That's part of the story.
Yeah, it's about her and like him talking to her. And by the end, it's him crying on a floor, screaming and... Hopefully she's by his side, but probably
no.
She went to go fuck her.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it's like, whoo, got out of that one. That guy is a mess. He needs to deal with his parents' divorce before he dates anyone again.
Yeah, she went off with Aiden behind the bleachers for sure. While Gerard is crying, I presume.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to improve this song for sure. Without a doubt. We're going to come up with a better version of this chart-topping hit when we come back. Okay, welcome back. I think one of your crucial insights for me that helped me figure out how to punch up this crazy thing was that it's an outlet. You know, we're screaming as angsty teens, and you're letting off the scene. You're just experiencing so much emotion. You need this song to help you channel it out. And there's a lot of truth to that for me. But also at the same time, like, it doesn't work for everybody. You know, maybe you need another outlet. And I was thinking, what do people listen to now in this time of high anxiety? You know, these trying times that we're
in. Oh, yeah. I know them very well.
They do be trying. So what are people listening to now? You know, I'm always on YouTube and getting served these recommended videos of, like, four-hour playlist to study to and calm down when you're stressed. I was thinking about that. I was like, this is a really strong punch up. So what I'm presenting to you now, for your enjoyment and sharp criticism, is I'm Not Okay, the Lo-Fi Bossa mix. You may not be able to tell it, but this is the same melody from the guitars that I put in this flute.
Oh yeah.
If you wanted honesty, that's all you had to say. I never want to let you down or have you go. It's better off this way for all the dirty looks.
It just works.
Your boyfriend remember when you broke your foot from jumping out the second floor? I'm not okay. I'm not okay.
Feel the stress rolling off of you.
What will it take to show you that it's not the life it seems? I've told you time and time again. You sing the words but don't know what it means. To be a joke and look another line without a hook. I held you close, we both shook. For the last time, take a good look. I'm not okay. No, I'm really, really not okay.
Somebody help the kids, or they're not okay.
I'm not okay. You wear me out.
I think I put a solo here.
Oh my God.
Nobody asked for this.
Forget about the dirty looks, the photographs.
Oh, but get ready for the breakdown.
You
I kept
you
it in.
Read me like a book, the pages all are torn and frayed. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay now. You really need to listen to me because I'm telling you the truth. I'm actually okay. I'm really into self-care. I got this mindfulness app and would love to tell you about essential oils. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not all fucking gay. Let's get serious, you fuckers. I'm not all fucking gay. I'm fucking losing it. I'm not all, not okay.
Beautiful. Soothing. You know, I think it's so, like, I think one of the things is, like, when you're young and you're a teenager, you want your music to, like, be so furious and loud, partly because, like, your environment is kind of fine. As I said, you are okay in a certain way, but you feel stuff. And yeah, then you get older and, like, shit really starts getting scary. Parents are dying. Friends are leaving you. You're sad. Your relationship's bust.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't feel okay, but you don't need your music to scream it at you. Life is screaming at you now, and you just need. So that felt like a mature, like I felt a mature version of saying I'm not okay.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, you're so right. Like life is already pouring on the grief and all sorts of reasons to panic. Why ratchet it up by screaming? This is an alternative version that is saying just as sincerely, I'm not okay.
Hearing the saxophone to the guitar solo, it makes me realize, oh, they're both, it's the same thing in a song. It's just like, words don't do it justice anymore. And this, I need to be so smooth. I need to be so groovy that the saxophone really, really brought it home for me.
Yeah, the emotion spilled over into saxophone, as it so often does.
And I feel like in that one, that's the person, this feels like the person talking to themselves being like, you're okay, you're not okay. This felt very like inside, talking to oneself through all the emotions and being like, it's okay, got the meditation app, got the oils, I'm really okay, but not deeply, no.
Yes, yeah, thank you. That's exactly right. There's so often that, I mean, on this show where I'm punching something up by, oh, we need to rewrite the lyrics to bring out, you know, the correct message of the song. Whereas in this case, we didn't touch the lyrics. Kind of need to leave those the same and let it live in this different emotional space.
Yeah, it was almost like, especially when he was talking about, remember when you jumped out the ledge? It was kind of a nostalgia. It felt more nostalgic. Like, remember when, like, you tried, like, doing something bold, but you just twisted your ankle? Oh, those were the days, I guess.
Yeah. You gave it a shot.
Death is going to come for you on its own accord any day now. You don't need to jump out ledges.
Yeah, you don't need to bring it any quicker. Death is coming on its own pace, and we could just stand here, and it'll come at the same rate.
I'm sure that Gerard Butler, the My Chemical Romance singer, I'm sure he wishes he could do this now. I don't know if he's in his 40s or his late 30s or something, but I'm sure that he wishes when he went on tour, this is the version he could do. Because I'm sure he no longer feels that, like, ah! He's feeling like, I'm not okay. Like, I'm sure that's the mood he's in.
Yeah, he has definitely arrived at this mood. And that's why it feels so right to punch it up in this direction. We're going to call this one Punched Up, for sure. I feel great about this one. And that brings us, thanks for your guidance, by the way. Thanks for your analysis and guidance and support. I feel like we're really nailing this one together.
Thank you for making a My Chemical Romance song I can fall asleep to. You know,
the world didn't know they were asking for it. The soporific sleep. You set your like alarm clock in sleep mode so it slowly fades over 59 minutes, you know, or whatever it is. That's what this is. Let's put this on a Spotify playlist, guys. The Sleepy Time My Chemical Romance mix. That brings us to a segment in our show where we're about to end the show, but we decide to give it a little palate cleanser, and it's called Walk-In Music.
What is your walk-in in music?
I'll go first. I took as my inspo, as my jumping off point for this week, the music I was listening to around the time of this My Chemical Romance, which I was listening to a bunch of bands that were in the like garage rock revival, like The Strokes and The Hives and there were a bunch of those, I guess, the nouns. And this was sort of like my emotional release song for a while, the one I want to turn up real loud and scream to. And so my walk-in scenario is I'm getting laid off. And I blast this on the way out as I flip tables and throw my most hated coworker's monitor on the floor. You know, just wreck some shit. And I guess this is my you can't fire me, I quit song. This This is Get Free by The Vines. They were around for a minute, but I don't think they had a hit that was bigger than this. This song absolutely shreds. And great to flip tables to. Great to empty a filing cabinet. Maybe set it on fire. Look your boss straight in the eye when you kick the vending machine over. That's my scenario. Getting fired. I haven't done a getting fired song yet, and that one feels right.
If you got fired from like hosting this podcast, it would be pretty extreme of a song for that.
Yeah,
they let you go from the podcast.
I need a different song for that because everything on coordinating this podcast is done over Zoom. It feels like.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like getting fired these days. There are going to be emails or Zoom, and
you're right. Why am I picturing this office space scenario when like the reality of our dystopia today is I'm getting fired over Zoom for sure. What's that song? I got to think of that for next time. But it's something very chill, probably. Quite frankly, I have to play my own bossa mix if I'm not okay.
Yeah.
That's for sure the I Got Fired Over Zoom song. God, how depressing. Man, well, you brought an awesome song, but I'm not going to spoil it. What's your scenario?
My scenario, if I remember this right, it's me getting to an airport. 1 minute after you're supposed to check in for an international flight.
Like they give you the 120 minute window or whatever it is.
Yeah. I believe I got to look it up because I'm going to Toronto soon.
Whoa. But so a big one, big trip.
But, I was once going to, Bermuda. That's a place you go to vacation, right?
Sure. I've heard of it.
My stepfather's former stepfather, technically, his second wedding. And I showed up at JFK 40 minutes before this very long flight. You have to be an hour before.
Major world traveler faux pas.
Yeah, and this is like for 3 days in Bermuda on my stepfather's dime. And I remember feeling like, oh, I'm going to get on this plane. And this is that kind of energy that I initially brought to the encounter.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is as you approach the airline desk.
Uh-huh. This rush. And then there's a 10-person line. So I'm holding on to this energy. What you
heard. Oh, no. They've long since said, last call for Bermuda.
This is
what you hear it. Listen.
This is me stepping up.
X-go, give it to you.
Woo!
For you to get it on your own. X-go, deliver to you. Knock, knock. Open up the door. It's real. Non-stop. Pump, pump. Stainless steel. Go hard getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make a mother wonder if you did it. Damn right, can I do it again? Yeah, I am like so.
Wow.
Break bread with the enemy.
Yeah.
Yes, pure alpha energy as you approach the desk. They're holding long eye contact with you. You're just staring them down. I can see it. I can picture it.
I'm taking my time, even though I'm in a rush. I'm walking up slow.
Yeah, nothing says you're not confident more than an awkward, clumsy rush. X is going to give it to you, United Airlines representative. And X, in this case, is John Marco.
And then immediately, when it's clear they're not going to make an exception for me, I change very much to an I'm not okay style, where I am just,
yeah.
My strategy normally in those scenarios is to be so overwhelmed, to be so screwed that they're scared if they don't help me, I might go home and take my own life. Like, that's my strategy. For them to be like, we gotta give this guy what he wants because we're gonna have his death on our hands if we don't.
Yeah, you have a plan A, which is DMX, and then you have a plan B, which is Elliot Smith or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, too soon. Too soon, really. With that.
And it changes fast. Yeah. It changes, like, you know, there's no fade into the next song. It's immediate.
Immediate puppy dog eyes and whimpering.
Yep, that's my strategy. And it did not work. I missed a whole day at Bermuda.
Oh, no, it didn't work.
No,
oh,
it did not
gosh.
Work at all.
I was hearing this whole story just assuming that it did work out to you, work out for you like an idiot. It didn't work. You missed the plane.
No, I took the subway back to Harlem where I was living at the time from JFK, which is not close.
Oh, that's 2 hours of tail between your legs subwaying.
And then the next day I just took a cab to the airport.
Wow. What a sad ending to that story. X didn't give it to them.
No.
That's a great scenario, I think, for any customer service, you know, for any customer service situation. A listener of this pod could bring this song confidently, but it's really great for the in-person ones. The swagger, yes. The entrance. I appreciate this one, man. This is a great pick. Gianmarco, where can people find you and follow you now that they've spent a pleasant hour of their lives listening to you talk about music?
Yes, please. I'm everywhere at Gianmarco Cerezzi. That's Gianmarco with a G, G-I-A. It's Italian. So Gianmarco Cerezzi. And then listen to my podcast, The Downside. You can watch it on YouTube or just listen to it everywhere you want. Spotify, Apple Podcast. It's called The Downside.
The Downside is an awesome podcast. It's really funny. It's got great interviews. It's just a fun time. So I'm doing myself a great disservice by telling you, my loyal audience, to go listen to a different show. But here I am doing it because I believe in that strongly. Go check out The Downside. My name's Evan Gregory. I have been your host. You can follow me at Get Some Evan. Of course, you can follow the podcast at Punch Up The Jam on all the platforms. And importantly, you can get the Lo-Fi Bossa mix of I'm Not Okay and every other punch up from the show on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Gregory Brothers. It's what all the smart music connoisseurs do. And now I'm here to say, on behalf of myself and your esteemed guest, Gianmarco, that we're not okay.
No. But we're not okay in a non-threatening way. We're telling you soothingly, like, listen.
In a very 2022 way where you say it on your social media, like, guys, I need some self-care, and I'm ADHD. This has been Punch Up The Jam.
Let's punch it.
Punch Up The Jam. Punch it up.
You've been listening to Punch Up The Jam.
Oh, I'm a bad book, baby. You don't want to turn these pages.
That was a HeadGum Original.